Welcome to another episode of Hair Biz Radio with your host, Zakira and
Mikey.
And we're back. It's been a few weeks, not too long, right?
Not too long. We just had a little break for, you know, the holidays.
The holidays. Christmas, yeah. And Mikey off, was gallivanting around the world.
I mean, a little bit. You know, I like to travel.
Yes. You went to China. I think we talked about that before. Yeah.
I was in, the last big trip was New Zealand.
New Zealand. Yeah.
Oh, fun. New Zealand is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, this, everything looks like a picture. Like, you can't take a bad picture there. Mm-hmm. Unless you have like an Android.
That was shade.
Apple. But
clearly, none of us have
Apple
Android
over here. You can use that clip for your next ad. Anyways.
Yes. Today, we have a special guest with us today. Matoi, she is the master microlink innovator. Okay. So microlinks, when did they get popular? When were they?
Oh, thank you for asking.
Yeah.
Microlinks became popular, I'd say, we're in the year 2024. I would say I noticed the popularity starting about 2014 or 2015
okay,
in my salon.
So about 10 years ago.
I'd say about 10, but maybe more recently, about 6.
Okay. So we're going to jump into everything because we want to hear about Matoi's story.
Due to the direct contribution of the work that we were doing at Blue Topaz Hair Boutique in West Midtown.
Period. Okay. Yes. All right. So we're going to jump into it. So Matoi, what even got you wanting to get started in the hair industry? Like, did you grow up in the hair industry or was this something that kind of just was in your path?
I didn't grow up in the hair industry, but I always had a natural talent for doing hair extensions.
Okay.
I probably did my first set of hair extensions at 9 years old.
Wow. And was that like a sew-in, a quick weave?
It was a glue-in.
Okay.
And then by middle school, I was doing sew-ins on my dad's friends. And high school, you know, ponytail sew-ins. And, you know, being from Detroit, I feel like a lot of us just naturally have like this way to primp ourselves.
Yes.
Initially, and then, you know, it just kind of grows into a career.
Yeah, Detroit girls are different. Okay, my best friend is from Detroit too, so yeah. It's definitely a thing.
How long have you been here from Detroit?
I've been here about 22 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so with being 9 years old with combs and weave and all that, how were people receptive to you as a child doing their hair as adults? Mm-hmm. Was it anything that you had to get over or...
I never really had to like force my hair skills or sell my hair skills to people. I just kind of did the work and it was nice. And then people will come based off of that.
Okay. So being nine, how did you learn how to do hair? Were you like watching videos or you just woke up and you like,
I kind of reverse engineered what the process was. Okay. My mother would be complaining. I just paid this woman $300. I got threads hanging out of my hair and you know, this looks a mess and this track is hanging and that track is hanging. And I'm like, I think I can do that. Like, I was that kid that just always felt so capable. Like, I can iron, I can do whatever. And
so you've always had confidence.
Yeah, like, I just always wanted to acquire skills and learn how to do things, like lifestyle skills.
I love that.
It's funny because we've interviewed a lot of people in the industry, obviously, for the last, we've been doing this for five, six, what year are we on?
I think maybe six.
Since 2017, we're at like year six or seven of the podcast. It's amazing how many people started at a very young age.
Yeah.
It's just really something. And it just kind of caught with them. And I think they would go through school and they're getting taught this other stuff. But they're still like, here's my passion. That's what I'm going with.
And what I love, what makes it so different about your story and unique is that you didn't come from the hair industry. Like, you literally created and crafted this skill that is like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. So growing up, what was your path? Did you try something else? Did you go to college, come back to hair, or have you always been hair?
My path was initially I wanted to go to broadcasting school. So I was in Michigan in a broadcasting school, Specs Howard. And I just decided to move to Atlanta. I came here, visited one weekend, just fell in love with everything Atlanta. And I just wanted to be here. So I left broadcasting school. I moved to Atlanta. And I went to school at Atlanta Tech after being here for like a few years.
Okay.
I went on the Georgia Hope Scholarship at Atlanta Tech.
Yes.
No debt, you know, for education.
No student loans.
Thank God for that. And I just basically, you know, everything started to grow from there for me. My careers when I first moved here was in retail. And I booked shows for a talent agency, like comedians, rappers, singers, And pretty much throughout all of those positions, I always did hair as supplemental income. I always did a really nice sew-in, real flat.
Flat, I was like, yeah.
And that grew the hair out really well, didn't shift, you know, after a few weeks. And so a lot of people just start to tell their friends and their friends about that. And I said, I'm going to hair school. That's when I went to Atlanta Tech.
I love it. So that was the turning point for you to go full-time in the hair industry?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you were in hair school, you were doing hair full-time and going to school?
I was doing hair. I was an assistant.
Okay.
Even though I had skills of my own. And I worked in salons where they didn't want sew-ins and they didn't want weaves. And they felt like weaves was this and weaves was that. And I'm like, but you're doing hair for $50 all day. You know, hair looking short and boring. And you know, I've seen the industry evolve in that way, especially here in Atlanta. A lot of people were not doing sew-ins when I went to Atlanta Tech and went to hair school, you know. So just like seeing the industry evolve, I guess I've been in long enough to really like see it evolve. I am from Detroit, where Little Willie invented the quick weave. I've seen that evolve, you know, to be braided down and glued across. Mm-hmm. So it's just really interesting and really nice.
I love that. So after hair school, what did you do when you left hair school?
I worked at, during hair school, I was an assistant and I remained an assistant at a few salons, probably Key Lime Pie in the Virginia Highlands and Saya Salon, which was one of the best black salons in Atlanta, maybe even the country at the time.
Wow.
And I went on to work at, I became a stylist at a salon called Nani. It was in Atlantic Station when Atlantic Station first opened. And that's where I became a stylist. That's where Matoi just got activated and became alive.
That's funny you worked at Key Lime Pie, because I remember that place.
Remember?
I never heard
of it.
So I definitely remember that place, and I remember how good it smelled in there, that smell. And it was just very beautiful inside.
Like a Veda.
Yeah, because Van Michael was down the street.
Yep.
Okay.
And, so that part of the Highlands – you know, I don't know where Key Lime ended up moving to.
Well, they didn't move. It's a framing store and a cigar, like maybe a smoke shop there now. Uh-huh. But it was such a culture. It held that block down between them and Van Michael. They held that block down. And the owner at the time was like the North American educator for Aveda. So I learned so much from her. Things that I still use to this day.
You know, and that's interesting because a lot of people now get down to hair school and they're like, boom, instant salon suite.
Yeah.
You know, what is that process like, you know, spending some time working as an assistant? Because now with social media, no one can be an assistant.
Right. Everyone wants to own.
You're always an expert.
First.
So what was that like being an assistant and actually going through that learning process?
I was really excited to be an assistant because I knew that I was learning different skill sets from a lot of different stylists. And I knew that when it was my turn to apply those skills, exactly how I would apply those skills, I already knew. And it was so interesting. I had a friend back home in Detroit, and a lot of people in Detroit, they do hair, but they don't have their license. And I'm like, how is this possible that you guys just set up shops and own things and you don't have a cosmetology license? And I called back home and told one of my friends, I'm an assistant, and you know, I work at this salon. And she's like, you are an assistant. I got an assistant.
Wow.
And I said, I realized the value of what I'm learning.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you got to still sharpen steel.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to learn from other people to be a master at something. Either you got to do it about 500 times or 10,000 hours, or you have to work under somebody who is a master. And that's what these young people don't understand. They don't have mentors. And when you don't have mentors, you don't have anything. Who are you patterning yourself after?
Is there anything that you could speak to talking to someone now, maybe in this Gen Z or millennials that are coming up now that are very impacted by social media and they want to be it? Like, I'm me. I need an assistant. I'm going to get an assistant. But you were saying that you didn't care about being an assistant. Like, you weren't like, I need to own this now. I need to skip these steps and do this. Can you speak to even how it may have built your confidence or built your work ethic or skills and why it was important for you to not skip that step?
Oh, it was important to not skip that step because the better assistant you are, the better stylist you'll be. The better stylist you are, the better salon owner you could potentially become. So, you know, if you want to be good at something, you have to be willing to start from the bottom and work your way all the way to the top. And that's just what I believe and know.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Instant gratification, it can happen, but it's not sustaining.
It's not sustainable.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. Yeah.
I don't think enough people understand today how the value of education and spend time learning, right? So to give you an example, I wanted to come out with something this week for our team, for our local stores. And I said, you know what? We need to button down like 2024 local SEO. So I'm on like a serious fitness kick, as we were just talking before we started recording. So both Saturday and Sunday, I walked 2 hours each day, which is about just over 6 miles each day. But I spent each of those two hours.
That's it? I'm just playing.
Planet Fitness. Seen you coming out of Planet Fitness?
Yeah.
Before sometimes.
Worst gym. Sorry.
But you know, if you need to get it in, it's
It's close.
I don't want to be at Planet Fitness either, but guess what? That Stairmaster is there for me.
Yeah. The one right over here?
Yeah. That Stairmaster is there for
same
me.
Same gym.
Yeah.
Look at that. But, you know, I spent 2 hours each day, local SEO, kind of buffering my skills. Now, I've spent 15 years learning SEO.
Yeah.
But I'm still spending this time to master my craft of local SEO and even did additional research, got a new program, like was doing all this stuff. What's new for 2024? I don't think it's the same thing with hairstylists. They need to stay like on trend and continue to spend a portion of their day educating and learning from others to be better.
That's important.
It's so important if you want to be successful. Like I've been doing this e-commerce for 17 years and I still spend a minimum of at least an hour a day, one way or another, educating myself about how to be better in the industry, at least.
Yeah, and so do a lot of leaders, owners, CEOs, founders, all of those people. They're consistently learning, whether they're in the business, on the business, they're learning, and it's important to continue to learn because every year is different. Like the marketing that we used in early 2000s is completely different from, or it's evolved from the marketing that we were doing then.
It's
now.
Evolved from 5 years ago.
Yeah. From last year. Shoot. We still figuring it out too.
Yeah. It's nonstop.
Yeah. So you came out of hair school and you were an assistant. And then what catapulted you to own your own salon, or when did you start? What was kind of the interim of you were an assistant, and then when did you begin building your brand exclusively?
I think the brand was building slowly but surely, just me doing sew-ins for people, you know, quietly and having those relationships. And when I worked at several salons, I worked at Salon Ramsey. I helped to make that salon popular. I know where my stamp is in this world, you know, and I can, it's time dated. We and some of my coworkers helped to make what Salon Ramsey became a reality show. Cause I always predicted that for them. I said, we're going to have a reality show one day, but I left before then. Just before then, the culture was changing. I worked at a salon that my friend owned, a live workspace. And then one day my assistant needed to get in and she couldn't get in the salon. And I said, you know what? It's time to go look for a different workspace. And I found Blue Topaz Hair Boutique, which is my first salon here in Atlanta. And it was a beautiful salon in West Midtown. And, you know, it was just time for salon ownership because it was time to control the environment.
Yeah.
I have a certain clientele and I have a certain energy. And that's always been important for me to provide this level of experience for my clients. And so I was able to do that.
And that's something
that was probably 2011.
2011. Okay. And that's something that we always talk about, experience. It's like one thing to be a stylist or a salon owner, but it's another thing to provide an experience for your clients when they're actually coming into the salon, spending their money, spending their time with you. What type of experience is it that you've always provided or always wanted to provide for your clients?
I've always provided free steam treatments with any service.
Nice.
As a standard, you give a person $15 or healthy hair, they're going to choose a $15. So how about we just make the hair healthy?
Let me help you.
Let me just do this and put in the price.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
All that separate a la carte building on stuff. Give it one price.
I love
that. Do everything for the client. And some of the things that I offer to clients are, you know, gift with purchase. When they get installs, they get free satin scarves, free satin ponytail holders, rollers to maintain it. Or we give clients umbrellas on the day it rains.
Nice.
We walk them out and give it to them. So, you know, just always providing that top tier quality customer service has been important to me. And it's just a standard. It's not even like a special thing. It's just what it is.
I love that. And I think that's important because Mikey always talks about when you walk into the hair store downstairs or any other locations, you want the experience to be memorable, like almost the Gucci of of hair extensions. Yeah. And so it's important that when people come, they're booking their appointment, but they're also feeling like, okay, I'm vibing with my stylist. Yeah. Like I love coming here. I love spending my money here. I love doing all of these different things. Not like, oh, I really need my hair done, but I hate sitting in there, or I really need my hair done, but I don't really vibe here. I just want to be in and out. So that's really important. So you went there, and then that was 2011. And then what happened from there?
What happened from there is I said, I'm not leaving to this salon till we're busting out the doors. Mm-hmm. And I think in 2018, 19, that happened. You know, it was some days where it was like, oh, it was kind of stagnant, idle. But I always believed in the magic and the power of the Matoi method as a technique that a person wears as well as what a stylist does. It's a two-edged thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, just out of one day, you know, just pure, like just manifesting and talking about it. I put a video up. One of my good friends, Ming Lee, was in the salon getting her hair done at my salon. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you get so many views? How do you get so many followers? Like, oh my goodness. Like, and she's like, you just gotta keep posting and, you know, just your stuff is the best stuff. She said something. I was like, okay. So I remember posting a video, putting some music behind it, taking a nap, waking up, and my phone was going crazy. And then, you know.
But before that, were you very consistent with posting videos? And so that was like a one video.
That. Okay. I'm not from that era. Okay. I'm from the era of I did a great job. I hang out with people. I pass my card out. I tell people I'm a stylist.
Yep.
And they make their way back to the salon. It seems like an impossible process for young stylists nowadays to think that you just, you know, there's no way for you to get it out to the world but one head at a time. So, you know, I've always been like a sew-in queen, you know, and I just felt like I didn't really like the what it was doing to the hair and the leave-out, and, you know, it didn't protect as much as, you know, you let on, and it was a one-size-fits-all type of look with no versatility. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted, you know, versatility. I wanted to see women, black women, specifically in a bun or a ponytail with their extensions. And I got to that place, you know, and I made everybody else care about their weave from just being stuck down like this to being able to go up.
I love that. And I was going to go into the method. When did, was that something that was evolved into what it is today? What, did you start that when you were younger?
No, I think around the year of 20, it was a while back.
Yeah.
One of my, you know, I was thinking about, I was doing tape-ins back then. Like tape-ins are back. Oh, well, and I'm like, okay, it's for you guys to discover, you know, what tape-ins versus, you know, other technique applications are. But tape-ins, I guess what was like cold fusions, infusions, I guess.
Oh,
the individual piece where you put the hot glue on there and roll it on there.
Is that the I-tips or the beat?
It's called infusions, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, infusions. Yeah, and then I-tips are...
Yeah, you have like the K-tips, you have the micro beads. You're doing yours, your method is with the weft, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so are you taking like a normal bundle?
I'm doing magic.
Oh, I'm doing magic.
Asking too much. There's actually been a lot of evolution for that as far as manufacturing goes, even for tape-ins. That can help with the process to make it very seamless.
Yeah. Well, when I was doing tape-ins, that was a while back, and there's much more education on how to apply and remove tape-ins or whatever. But just, you know, in comparison to all the other weave techniques, I just felt like it was something missing, and it was.
Yeah.
And, you know.
What do you think stands your method out from everyone else's? What makes it special?
It grows the hair. It's easy to put in, easy to take out. The textures match, and it's original. I'm not good at doing a sew-in that the lady Christina invented. I'm good at doing what I created and what I put here.
I love it.
So people rename it. They call it invisible weft and method and this and that, but it didn't exist until I put it that way. At Salon Rose.
I did that. I love it. So for women who are looking to be versatile in their hair extensions, whether they're used to wearing sew-ins their whole life, what would you recommend is probably the best style for someone who is looking to grow their natural hair or something that is very, when we talk about natural, what are the styles? Like braids are considered a protective style. Yes. So what do you think is the best protective style for women of color? Or is
it's
there
a
no
few
one
different.
Thing?
It's no one thing. Okay. The best protective style for women of color is probably a glueless wig, a quick weave, okay. a braided down quick weave. You know,
because none of your hair is out. You're not.
Well, the quick weaves, your hair is out. The natural quick weave is out. But I think probably some kind of wig application with no glue maybe would be one of the best protective styles.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, those have evolved a lot too. Yeah. I mean, we were looking at some before, and it's incredible just in the last few years as far as the manufacturing capability and the real life look that they can now give is unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
And that's after, you know, years and years and years of observation. And, you know, even though I've not worn wigs all like that, I see and I know what works and how they could work. And wigs are the thing. They're great.
Yeah.
You know, especially when they can be put on. You can put them behind your hairline or cover the hairline up and just totally protect everything. That's the ultimate protective style.
I love it. So if people wanted to learn about the Matowi method, how can they do that?
They can go on www.matowimethod.com or they can send me a direct message on Instagram at Matowi at Blutique Hair. You can call the salon 404-936-5216.
Okay.
And email me.
Info so do you have like one-on-one classes
one-on-one Zoom classes and sometimes group classes. I haven't done a group class in a while, but I can put one together.
So if someone wants a one-on-one class with you, what does that look like? Are they coming to your salon or are you going to their salon or
typically
is it like all day?
Yeah, it's all day. Typically they come to Blutique around 9 a.m. and we start to talk about the theory of hair extensions and micro links and the history and, you know, the approach and the mind frame behind a stylist who offers this and the client, the persona of a client who wears this kind of extension. Then we go into a demo.
Because it's not for everyone,
It's not
right?
for everyone. It's definitely not for everyone. There's a lot of no's. If you care about the integrity of clients' hair, there are a lot of no's in this technique. And that's okay because there are a lot of yeses too. And those yeses, they attract like-minded and similar kind of clients to you. So, you know, you rather say no than to do something that doesn't look great.
Right.
That somebody's upset about or it's a one-time. It's a customer, not a client.
Absolutely. So what qualifies someone?
It's different factors that make people a candidate for the technique, such as density, length, hair condition, color, different things like that. Lifestyle, location.
Okay.
Are you in a city that I train someone in to maintain your hair? I don't care about putting it in if you go off and you can't have maintenance. And
right. That's actually really good. I love that because sometimes people will fly into places and get their hair done, but then when they go back home, there's no way to maintain it. And now they're like, oh, my hair came out. And it's like, well,
I would do it myself. I'm like, no, this is not for you to
absolutely
do
not.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So they can do one-on-one classes. So the method is available to people to learn. Okay. Got it. And so how would you
licensed stylists and cosmetology students
only?
Mostly.
Most.
I've had people slip in on me. I don't know how, but
those kitchen stylists came in. Snuck in.
Yeah.
So how would you say you've developed or what have you learned within the last, let's say, 2 to 3 years about yourself and about you as a businesswoman?
I've learned that just to stay flexible. You know, that business have ebbs and flows and just to stay consistent, offer the same consistent quality and just do what you do and do it great and do it the same way. And, you know, it always works. Do what works, you know, don't veer from the plan.
Stick to the plan. Stick to the plan. I love it. So were there any obstacles that you faced in your journey of where you are today that you were able to kind of bounce back from or learn from that you could share that would encourage other people to
Be willing to learn from other stylists, be willing to not already know and I do it like this and this is the way and just kind of like follow directions. I think doing hair and doing certain careers is just about like using your eyes and following directions and like listening and anticipating what people want. Like never assume, be open to communicate with a client, with whatever. If you're not open to have like back and forth communication, then the hair industry could potentially not be for you because you have to make sure that you guys are meeting expectations and you can't assume that we're doing the same thing like last time or we're just going to do it this way. So it's always just like being willing to have open client communication, sticking to the plan, being consistent, educating yourself, mm-hmm. as Mikey was saying, and, you know, doing things that you're good at and you're passionate about, not necessarily trying to be good at everything.
Right. But the one thing that is like your thing.
So when you, you know, this is, it'll be interesting because there's, we talked about it earlier about how a lot of people get into the salon suites or want to open their own salon. What are some of the challenges you faced opening up your own salon as far as the leasing, the build out? You know, I always say with construction, it takes twice as long and costs twice as much.
Yeah.
Did you have the same experience?
I absolutely had the same experience, especially with this last salon. It's a much larger salon than my first salon. And, you know, with the leasing office and with the fire marshals and them signing off on different things, the architects and the the contract workers who will just play with your time.
Oh yeah,
and say that it's going to be done.
Uh-huh.
And you know
they will play on your face all day and ask you for the check.
Yeah, where's they will my play money? With you all day. So yeah, those kind of challenges. I remember having a grand opening for the space and then not being able to open up for a month later because I needed a Knox box and it was one last thing. And I was the first company in the whole complex that they just put this rule on. And,
wow.
You know, just.
The city will just come up with stuff. Oh, yeah. I tell
sometimes.
You what.
Yeah.
And will. Especially when it comes to, people don't realize when it comes to building out, if you're taking over a salon, it's a lot easier, right? Uh-huh. But if you're building something completely new, there are a lot of different things you have yes. to go through.
Yep.
I know this because when we were building out Tucker, they kept thinking that it was a salon.
Yeah, and I'm a hair store.
They want the back pressure test with the water and all this miscellaneous stuff and trying to deal with DeKalb County, who the whole county doesn't work, by the way. So like trying to get stuff done. I'm sorry if you work for DeKalb County and shop with private cable, but I'm just being honest and you know it.
County.
Right? Like, I'm just saying, like, the amount of stuff you had to go through. And I just kept saying, we don't do hair. We sell hair. Not every place does hair. We're not hairstylists. You know, this is just a store, a showroom.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, kept being like, look at the photos. And it was just, it was a headache. Lot. It was a lot. Like, people don't realize just getting stuff done and the cost involved with the stuff is just. And I get stuff. We have contractors we work with for a decade. So, I mean, I get stuff done. Pretty reasonable, but still.
Materials, wait times.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you sign the lease or buy a building, the clock's ticking.
On. Oh, yeah. The pressure ticking. Is on.
You know, you're opening late and you're paying rent. That's painful.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It is painful.
Oh, yeah, it's painful. I stayed in the house and I cried mm-hmm. for a week.
Yeah.
I had a whole party saying I'm opening up and I'm not even opening up for another 3 weeks, almost a month.
Yeah.
And that was an obstacle. But how did you get through that?
We opened the doors and curled their hair when they came on in.
There you go. There you go.
So I want to talk about building a team. I know that one of the biggest struggles with entrepreneurs, owners, are sustaining a really great team. Have you had any struggles with building a team? And if so, how did you kind of get through that?
I've had struggles with building a team, maybe keeping a team at certain times, mm-hmm. you know, keeping the team cohesive at different times, you know, but the challenge is staying motivated within yourself to keep your team motivated in that way. So, you know.
Yeah, it's always a challenge with building out a team. I mean, we're the smallest we've been in probably 4 or 5 years, and we've really streamlined things because the team was pretty big. I mean, you remember we were at like 30 something people, and we were like when we had all the writers and everybody else, remember? Yep. I mean, it was wild how many people we had working for the company to get a lot accomplished. But it is tough, especially when someone has worked with you for a while and just like, well, we used to do it like this. And I was like, yeah, but we had to make
doing it like
this. Yeah. Changes,
yeah.
You know, like, and then just keeping everybody on board mm-hmm. with the plan, because I know you hold your team to a higher level, like standard, as far as hairstylists go and the service when people come in. Cause actually I remember before I even knew who you were, I remember like on Instagram, some of your videos would show up in my feed and I would be like, hey Dallas, you know, this is like, oh yeah, yeah, I know who that is. Oh, okay. And it was just interesting because that's how I first found out about you was, and it might've been one of the videos of you walking out with like an umbrella,
okay,
you know, with somebody or something. Cause that's something I would do. Cause yeah, I appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
You know, when I see people coming into the showroom, I'll like run to the door and open it up mm-hmm. for them. Just little things people yeah. don't, I just don't know if they do anymore. And they're kind of like, wow, why are we doing this? This is like, nobody else does this. Exactly.
That's why. So yeah, that's why. Exactly. Because no one else does it. Yeah. What is going to set you apart from everyone else in the industry? Because there are hair salons all over the place. But oh, yeah. why would someone choose to come to your salon?
And I've been incredibly blessed in my career. You know, I've done some people that they found me in the most organic way, from Lala to Lizzo to yeah. Nia Long to Kelly Rowland to Michelle Williams to K. Michelle, you know, just countless Megan Good, countless names, you know, and, I, you know, let it be told, I do the same kind of hair all the time and it looks whatever, but it's just the natural, it's something so natural
yeah.
that, you know, people can see. And the countless of women that I've done in Atlanta and across the country when I've toured and done hair. So, yeah. you know, I've really been in it, really been about the craft, really been about the work and the look and the feel and experience and making sure that people know that this is a real thing. It's not a hype or Instagram thing. This is
yeah,
a lot of years of experience. This is real life.
So do you plan on staying behind the chair for a lot longer, or are you transitioning or building something else? That
I have a couple things that I'm working on. And no, I don't plan on staying behind the chair forever, but I know that a lot of the relationships that I do have is because of my talent.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to, you know, harness and keep certain relationships and still keep my skills sharp.
Yeah.
There's not going to be a way, I don't think I can get away from completely touching someone else's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it just gets tough, like the evolution of your hairstylist, and after doing it for so long,
mm-hmm.
it is tough on your feet. Like if people don't realize sometimes it's a tough job, like your hands, you know, your fingers and working with hair and just doing everything, chemicals, standing on your feet for a long period of time, especially as you get older.
Yeah.
It's not as easy.
Well, thanks to the Matoi method, you know, that could be done in like an hour and a half.
Woo!
But still, like you're on your feet. Like if you were doing the Matoi method all day, that's like
you're on Matoi only doing the method.
A lot of people, it's all day.
You had all day hours, you know, before. But you know, when you're making it like that, you don't even feel that you're on your feet sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you talk about time spent versus money made, and it don't, you know, it don't feel like you're on your feet like other stylists feel, you know, other ways that you could feel like you're on your feet doing hair.
I love it.
Just because of what you're earning and how fast it does and what you create, you know, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I see myself, I still was a hairstylist as an older lady doing the Sassoon haircuts.
Yes.
And, you know, blowouts and 2 hours, you know, 4 people in 2 hours. Those type of numbers.
I feel like when a hairstylist decides that they're not doing hair anymore and you have a long list of clientele, it's like a bad breakup. Like, why are we breaking up? Where are you going? Why are you leaving me?
Well, I'm so lucky to have people around me that want to learn my ways and that mm-hmm. I train, that I can like kind of transition clients. I've always been somebody who has, you said people don't give people clients. And I'm like, that's not true. You know, I've spent years giving clients, mm-hmm. even my own personal clients that I do, to other people, recruiting nice. Clients for yeah. other styles. It just kind of came with the territory and the overflow. But yeah.
I love that. And I think that's so important because it seems like as you're building your team, you're allowing them to come up with you, like right on the side.
I try.
Of you. Yeah.
You know, but you, I try.
I'm sure there's a story that we're not going to talk about.
Right.
It's all good. It's all good. You know, but when that's the thing, when you go through business for so long, stuff's just going to come up.
Yeah.
You're going to have a mixture of personalities. You're going to have a mixture of generations. Yeah. And it is very challenging. I can say, like, as someone that's had a lot of staff over the years, one of the toughest parts about this business is staff, right?
I had a big walkout this year. Y'all say challenges. I didn't want to necessarily reveal it on the first conversation, but I went from having a large team and, you know, feeding everybody clients to a big walkout from managers, and like it was a planned thing.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was really like new and devastating for me in business. But I realized that you still can keep going.
Yeah. Did you learn anything from that? What was kind of, was it more of a, okay, I'm upset and angry, or was it, let me find out why or what was
I learned to watch my business more with me touring and doing a lot of classes and being gone all the time. You know, people still need order in your business, you know, and it's still a culture that made it all work and that has to be implemented. And I'm no slave master or I'm not an unfair person to work for. I know that about myself.
Yeah.
But people want what you have. They want what you have.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if a client is only your client while they're in your chair, a stylist only, no one has to work for you or with you or whatever. And people just, after a while, they feel like, you know, it's because of them that they have what they have. And then they realize you were really up under a situation that provided you and afforded you a lot of things. Yeah. So, it, you know, that was really challenging for me this year. But overall, it just helped me to keep things in perspective and just kind of be about the work.
Yeah.
As long as the hair looks great and the clients feel great, they'll come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's always someone that wants to learn how to do, you know, there's students in hair school all the time. There are people who are looking to elevate their career. And those are the people who I always seek and find and align with.
Is there anything special that you can share that you or that you would like to share that you have going on for 2024 or anything new coming or approaching?
Well, I do have something new approaching and coming. It doesn't have anything to do with the hair industry.
Okay.
But for 2024, I just like imagine these shapes and these certain kind of classic hairstyles for my clients. And I'm kind of excited about getting into a space where I can translate these looks onto the clients with the micro links, with quick weaves and with wigs, working more with wigs.
Love it.
Yeah.
And so you're going to be working on putting a workshop together because people are going to be asking.
When can we add that to the website? Yeah.
How can we get into this method, especially if we don't have to be behind a chair for longer than an hour and a half?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
You grow to that place. That's where I'm at with the install, you know, but it definitely can go there. You know, it's not a thing to where you're great at it overnight. And if you love doing hair, you do it anyway. And then it comes. You know,
yeah.
So that how long eureka moment comes.
So for somebody that's new and they're just getting started doing the method after they've learned, what do you think the average time for them to do it is?
I would say after the hair is straightened out, probably about 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not bad. So that's after like a wash.
Yeah. Because honestly, I could probably do it in 45 minutes. Some installs I can do in like 45, 30 minutes. I say an hour and a half just to, if I walk away or if I'm laughing and talking with coworkers, but I can get it in.
And that's actually that's why really I say, great.
On the feet.
Yeah.
For me.
I love that because some people, when they go to the hair salon, they're expecting to be in there for 5, 6, 7 hours in the day. I know you've heard of some stylists that.
That's ghetto.
It's so ghetto.
I'm sorry. Let me not say ghetto. That's unprofessional.
Yeah.
And I've heard these stories and I love to be that place that was like, wow, this was quick. My hair looks natural. It's growing. And, you know, I didn't spend all day in here.
That's the big thing.
And I got what I wanted.
Yes.
And I got something more than I ever had from out of a hairstylist.
That's why you need to know the method, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a thing. It's really a thing.
I love that. And that, I think, alone sets you apart because I know for me, I hate going to the hair salon because I don't like being in there all day. I'm like, I don't.
You've been in the right hair salon. Or maybe you've been in a suite, you know. And I think the suites are great, but I think the suites are for professionals looking to downsize more so than a person coming out of school. That's my personal opinion. And I think the salon culture is a dying culture, like a salon team. There are not a lot of salon teams that really exist. Yeah. And I'm like, hell, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that goes. Yeah, it is. I think that's going back to what were you talking about how everyone just wants to have their own space. They want their own space. They want to do their own thing, and they don't necessarily want to build out a team. But
I understand that too,
for sure. I think for some people it works.
Understand that mindset. Yeah,
I think it works. However you make it work, it works for you if that is where you are and. What you want to do, and then if you are someone who wants to build and expand, having a team is something great to do.
There's no rules to this thing. I think as long as you're passionate about what you do and you do a great job and deliver a great service, then, you know, that's success.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you were like, we need to talk about this?
We need to talk about that. I'm a twin mom.
Yeah.
If I did two twin girls.
Yeah.
And the year that they were born is the year that the Matoi method blew up. I stayed in the hospital for months.
Wow.
I did I did the technique to two people while on bed rest in the hospital.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I'm like, who would come on the, to the
you
hospital
You were in the hospital
somebody?
For 2 months after you had them? Before.
And then maybe like a month after I had them.
Okay.
And like at the beginning of my stay in the hospital, I had two clients come in there, get their hair done. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this wow. is crazy. But I was bored. I was yeah. bored.
And of course, you on bed rest.
You're like, what? And I'm used to like doing things. And so they came by and it just blew up from there. And so my girls were babies when I and little and really didn't realize I was gone so much. So mm-hmm. it's like with them becoming more aware that I was gone as much as I was, I kind of slowed down okay. with traveling and doing the classes as yeah. much because I'll be going every week, every week.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd be in two cities a week. I've been in three cities in 1 week before.
Wow.
And I forgot what the question was.
You wanted to talk about the twins.
I wanted to talk about my twins. Baby.
How old are they?
Topaz and Turner, they're 7 3/4.
7 3/4. They okay, would so say. They're about to be 8.
So they're about to be 8, and they're identical twin girls. And, you know, just as sure as I imagine
twins.
That one day everybody around the world will be interested in applying extensions in the way I created, their life is like just more of the power of manifestation and also the salon space that I'm in.
So are they like mini use? Are they going around like with the combs and the Barbie dolls and trying to do hair?
Yeah, they beat on the mannequins and yeah. try to, you know, braid and twist up or like, oh, do my extensions and stuff. But yeah, they're beauty girls for sure waiting to happen. They are interested in like doing their own hair now and doing certain stuff. But, you know, that's a talent. If they want to explore that, we can definitely go there.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going
to
be.
Yeah, they like to do makeup too, though.
Really?
Yeah.
It's all beauty. It's all beauty. In there. Yeah. I love it. Oh, twink. I love twins. I always wanted twins. Really? I want twins, but yeah. We just going to see.
I told people my whole life I was having twins, and when I got pregnant, they were like,
twins run in your family?
My grandmother's brothers were twins, but
okay.
I didn't know that their dad.
Your maternal grandmother or your...
My maternal grandmother.
Okay, I'm trying to see something. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, my maternal grandmother. And then their granddad on their dad's side was a twin.
Okay.
We didn't know.
Oh.
At first, yeah.
Okay.
So I guess so, but I didn't know that I would pick somebody who...
Right, you know, who was a twin.
Yeah, the twin.
Right.
Gene, so yeah.
I love it. Okay, so where can people find you? Where can they follow you? Where can they come to your salon? Are you accepting new clients?
We are always accepting new clients.
Okay.
You can find me at Bluteak Salon, 2484 Briarcliff Road, Unit 24. I'm on Instagram at Matoi. The salon is at Bluteak Hair. That's BLEUTIQUE Hair. And I'm around. I'm around.
Where's your salon on Briarcliff? I'm trying to think.
It's North Jewel Hills in Briarcliff near the Navy Federal Credit Union. Do you know where Elect Core Power Yoga, Italiano, Guitar Center, it's in that same complex with like Starbucks, the waxing and threading place, Moe's, Lash
That's
Lounge.
Like Chick-fil-A is over here too, right?
It's yeah, Chick-fil-A is across the way.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, okay. It's across the street from there.
I cannot yeah. be sure where that is.
I'm you know where the Navy Federal Credit Union is?
No, I used to go over that way all the time and then I stopped.
It's a grocery store called Lidl over there. It used to be Lohmann's, but you're from
yeah, where Lohmann's is.
Where Lohmann's was.
I remember Lohmann's, yeah. yeah.
So that's where I'm at over there.
Yeah, I used to go to Lohmann's all the time before I built Basics. We'll talk yeah. about that in the next episode.
I got my husband some shoes from there.
Oh, let's save it for the next episode.
Guys. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
yeah, I know. That's a great area.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nice over there.
Dope. Yep, I love it.
It's been a nice journey over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So y'all go check out Matoi. Make sure you log on to her site because she's going to have a workshop coming up. We don't know when, but it's going to be soon.
We're in February. We yeah. can do it late March.
Okay, so make sure you guys be on the lookout for that. If you don't want to be standing up for 5-6 hours doing hair on your clients.
On one head.
Yeah.
For 5-6 hours on three heads.
Yes. Make sure you tap into this. Thank you so much. You were an amazing
guest. Thank you guys.
If you guys are watching on YouTube, make sure just get into the hair, get into the outfit because she's looking amazing. Okay, ooh, today. Okay.
Thank you. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely.
I knew I was coming here. I wanted to impress you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, but we appreciate y'all for listening. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, send us a message, and let us know who you want to hear from. We would love your opinion and your input. And thank y'all for rocking with us this long.
Thank you.
Let's get it in 2024. Let's go.
Let's go.